2 weeks ago, President Trump decided that he needed a relief from the relief effort needed in Puerto Rico and figured that he would use an Alabama rally to suggest that NFL players who take a knee for the national anthem should be fired. He then proceeded to call them sons of bitches. You heard me right. President Donald Trump didn't want to stick to politics, and he left the American sports world wondering if NFL teams should fire folks for using their First Amendment right. Sadly, the entire reason for Colin Kaepernick sitting and then kneeling has kind of been forgotten, and since then it's kind of been co-opted by the NFL. First, Sports Illustrated came out with the most tone-deaf cover and tone-deaf photos since Kendall Jenner gave the world a Coke. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, misjudged his entire audience, fan base, and sponsors when he decided to have his team not offend anybody and kneel before the anthem, and then have his team stand during the anthem as a show of respect. They were met with boos. The fact that that's happened has left Jones now saying that anyone who does not stand during the national anthem for his team will not play. So, the fact that this still remains a news topic 2 weeks later, despite us not getting a chance to actually speak about this, we figured we would talk about it from all the angles. I figure that there's a lot of angles, and I'm sure Mark will agree and or disagree. And for me, quite a lot of them are tiring. So, as we get started, here are the four topics that I'd like to speak about, and I'm sure Mark would want to add or not add. So the first one is kneeling during the national anthem disrespectful to America? Should you be able to protest at work, or should your bosses be able to fire you? How much of this is just folks not liking black people? I would say NFL players, but that's just 75% of the players are black. And how do you protest while not offending anyone? I'm Kalicho Sunwa.
Mark Stern.
Welcome to Distorted Shades of Grey. Mark, do you have anything to add?
It's a Trumpian situation. I feel like that is now in the dictionary. A Trump-like political situation is now Trumpian. It's manages to combine domestic politics, human rights, culture, social media, racism, and smash them all together in some terrible pronunciation of Puerto Rico. And then we're done. And then we move on to the next Twitter storm where he's trying to, you know, throw a brick at North Korea or, I don't know, grope some more women, seeing as this is the year anniversary since the Access Hollywood tapes were dropped. So this is the world we live in. But I would say that your questions are pretty comprehensive in terms of the Trump NFL dispute.
It's also an interesting wrinkle, and I don't think that we can forget how much of this comes down to Trump having, like, I think 30% approval rating. I don't think any president has ever had that kind of approval rating. I don't think any president has had, like, battle rappers come out in such fury against them. And we've had people, like, Killer Mike sang about Ronald Reagan, you know, people have sang about, like, George Bush pulling down the towers, but nothing like this. So it's interesting to have so many people, like, genuinely hate the President of the United States of America, and not be it for policy, but just because of who they actually are.
Yeah, I mean, the outrage against it has been not quite universal, but it gets ever wider in the initial reaction to the NFL protest or Donald Trump picking on those players that chose to protest the killing of black people by police officers in the States. The number of people that come out against Trump publicly is spectacular. I don't necessarily think that it is anywhere near universal, nor a watershed amount that would actually start to politically impinge on the power that he has. I think that while he's far too stupid to understand what he's talking about, I think it was quite intelligent, but it backed off right at the edge there. I think his PR team knows America far better than America knows his PR team. I think the NFL is now, it surprises me that he hadn't gone after them before. You know, it's a league, or just sports in general, because it's a league, like you said, that is predominantly made up of black people. There is already the tension about them being paid too much, according to many sports fans. that tension is already inherent within the sports world of the US. So it seems like such an easy win for him to go after them, saying, look, they get paid too much. They should be thankful for what they have. This country has given them everything or the opportunity to achieve what they want to achieve. I'm kind of like, that's well within the Trump PR discourse. And I'm just surprised it didn't happen sooner. And the part about it that I found most uncomfortable, if I'm honest, was the behaviour of the team owners. They managed to revel in a degree of public relations sunshine that the NFL has barely managed in the last couple of years. The reeling of controversy to controversy, even within this idea of protesting the flag, they've fumbled that so many times, it gave them a perfect opportunity to kind of rewrite how badly they handled Colin Kaepernick first protesting. Was it last year? Are we only 12 months
into it? We are 12 months into it.
Yeah, which is incredible to think. And I basically was uncomfortable that it made the NFL institutionally look like the good guy when actually institutionally they are the prime Trump, you know, buddies. They are Roger Goodell and all of these like multi-billion-dollar franchises.
And owners, I'm going to interject here, and owners who publicly gave money to Trump.
Right, and owners that publicly gave money to Trump as well profit off of the visible degradation of people of color.
Black bodies,
in
man.
The United States predominantly. Yeah, I mean, the correlations between NFL and the America's long history of violence on bodies, although this one's well much more well remunerated, you can see that there's a kind of hierarchy there that is mendacious, I think. And the fact that this Trump managed to make the institution of the NFL look good is deeply problematic. And at the time, I think they got lots of positive coverage and they're still basking in that, even although Roger Goodell wrote to all the NFL owners to say these players aren't allowed to protest the flag anymore because it's starting to hit our advertising revenue, our money, basically. And as the most well-remunerated sport in the world, the biggest ad deals and all that sort of thing, this is where we're at. They get to bask in the moment of standing up to Trump, even though the Trump's fight was never about like the NFL and black players. They were actually protesting something completely different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's collapsed the whole thing into something that's politically different from where it first started.
I just want to be clear here. You said something really hilarious. You said that you were not surprised that the President of the United States came after a sports league. Let's just put that into the entire context of history, entire fucking context of Abe Lincoln, of John F. Kennedy, of Ronald Reagan, came after a sports league. All right. Now, is kneeling during a national anthem disrespectful of the country or disrespecting the country? What do you think? Just really quickly.
I mean, you've got to kind of deconstruct. You already know this isn't going to be quick. You kind of got to deconstruct what about an anthem, a flag, and a country it is that you are operating within and what relationship you have to those things. Because I think the immediate and where I would start with this point is that it is a form of protest. It is peaceful. It is considerate, given that Colin Kaepernick did this in collaboration with a vet who told him that actually this is what we did in recognition and respect of the flag and military and country and whatever. So even within the bounds of how America would usually have that conversation, I think it's an expression that has integrity and it's very visible and moving. And I think it's, you know, one of the Black Power salute at the 60s Olympics. I can't remember.
I'm just going to interject and interrupt you really quickly just to give context for everybody. Colin Kaepernick in week one and week two of the preseason last year did not sat down during the national anthem. During week three, he sat down as well and was filmed sitting down. He then had a conversation with the media who didn't notice the first 2 weeks and didn't say anything, but in the third week they noticed, had a conversation with him, found out why he was doing it. Week four in the preseason, he sat down as well. He then sat down with Nate Boyer, who's a Green Beret and military veteran, and told him, look, I get what you're coming from and I understand you and I back you, but what I want you to do is, if you were to kneel, it's a sign of deference, especially it's what the people in the Green Beret and in other military forms actually do when they're marking someone who has fallen. So he's essentially taken a knee, saying that America has fallen short of these standards and expectations that America has set to live by. But continue.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So within that context, his protest against the flag is poignant and moving, and I think deeply effective, because we're still talking about it today. So I fully support that. But what I think, you could push that conversation further, not necessarily on this forum, but I find that a typical example of a kind of Trumpian compromise that I find myself making, whereby I desire what was previously quite a conservative outcome. So I think, yes, Colin Kaepernick continued to do that. But the whole conversation about is it or is it not respectful to the flag and to the country and to the anthem, well, I'm like, why, what is respect and who should be respectful? You know, if I know these things are incredibly potent markers, but flags and anthems and, you know, nationality is obviously big symbols of nationalism, essentially. And so I'm kind of like, we get into sticky mud about how to best respect the country seems like a unqualified and dangerous conversation to be having. So I think that lies beyond, that's not just Colin Kaepernick's, you know, weight to carry, that is embedded into American culture, especially football games at every level. I guess I just think it's wrong to say that everything is operating smoothly whereby everyone's respecting the flag either through protesting or not. I think that whole respecting a flag and an anthem is kind of uncomfortable.
I'm just really confused by it all. I mean, to give a bit of context, I live in the north of Manchester, now Greater Manchester, and I know people in the north don't necessarily sing the national anthem in the UK. They don't sing God Save the Queen. They will stand for it. They will not sing God Save the Queen. They will not put their hand over their heart. Is that disrespecting the United Kingdom, or is that disrespecting the Queen? Also, it's funny, and my friend Anjali will actually say this, because she listens to it and she likes to talk about how two people not from America are talking about American ideas and politics and history. And she always mentions and makes me remember in the 1960s, as black people were trying to, black Americans were trying to get their civil rights, they were holding American flags and people were ripping those flags off them. Ripping those flags off them as if to say, this flag does not belong to you. Now he's not standing for the flag, and it's stand up for this flag, despite the fact that the flag, and despite the flag, the fact that if you hang an American flag horizontally, it's been disrespecting to the flag and actually going in violation to the flag code. So when the NFL bring up the huge flag that covers up the field, it's disrespecting the flag. When you have a bikini with the American flag on it, it's disrespecting the flag. When you have flag on memorabilia, it is disrespecting the flag. It is literally breaking the law. I find it hilarious that, and I find it, that's why I'm confused, is all these signs of him not standing up to a national anthem, which the third stanza talks about, like, sparing no mercy for slaves, and the history of black and brown people having the flags ripped out of their hands as they tried to march for civil rights. That is disrespecting the flag and disrespecting America. But Donald Trump, like, disrespecting a Gold Star family who lost a loved one, that's not disrespecting the flag. That's not disrespecting the military. Donald Trump talking about John McCain as him being someone who was captured and saying, I don't like my heroes captured, the guy who fought, that's not disrespecting the flag. Someone who deferred from war so many times with the most bullshit reasons, as like I think one of them was like gout in his toe, that is not disrespecting the flag. Like, people are, for me, are really exposing themselves on that disrespecting the flag thing, where it's, we want you to stand up for this flag. We don't want you to challenge what the flag is supposed to represent. We don't want you to challenge the fact that you expressing your right and disrespecting the flag is actually paying homage to America and the fact that you can decide not to. I'm just really confused as to why that is. And this is where it becomes really tiring, because for me, it slowly stops being about the flag. It slowly stops being like this distractionary tactic to not speak about systemic oppression or the killing of unarmed black and brown people. And it stops being that conversation. It starts being, hey, why can't you just, you know, protest peacefully like Martin Luther King did, except, you know, nobody wanted him to do the march on Washington and nobody wanted him to block the roll, the entire bridge in Selma.
As a sidebar, just to go in on that, I saw that Ta-Nehisi Coates shared a bunch of polls from like the 1950s and 60s and compared them with how they were responded to today, and it essentially showed the same question of do you think like Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement is helping or hindering the cause of black people in America? And like over 60% of these southern white people said, oh, the civil rights movement is hindering black people in America. And he showed similar polls asking similar questions with the similar results in 2017. And you're just like, I mean, obviously racism lies at the heart of this issue. Let's not beat about the bush. But I do think, you know, what you just said, if I could just go back to my earlier point about Trumpian compromise, like, I think the two parts of it are best exposed when you think about Donald Trump and his the gold star vet. You know, on the first hand, you're like, you are amazed that a president of the United States could be so disrespectful to a person, a military person, because that is unheard of. And it really points out to this massive contradiction that Trump...
A Republican president of the United States.
Yeah, a Republican president of the United States is so dismissive of the military. And you want to use that as a contradiction to be like, well, people can't even talk about the military critically without being saying that you're some sort of like enemy of the people. So you want to expose that contradiction on the first hand. But I feel like where we are today, and as I said about the Trumpian contradiction, I feel like we don't even have the space or time to talk about what it means to be so praising of a military. And like, in other times, why do you want military vets standing up and talking at political debates for a politician to take them down? I mean, you've really got to ask questions about how military power work within our politics. I mean, I think other countries look at America and be like, oh, well, we're not that militaristic. But I think you really have to ask questions. It's still there. It's still there. I see ads in Britain for like the Marines and how they target, you know, lower income working class men through these advertisings of like camaraderie and stuff. So militarism isn't absent at all. And I think that's a conversation that we just can't have because Trump is just so mental that we just have to be talking about the contradictions, which I think are important.
Let's ask the second question, and we might have to do a little bit quicker on this one. And I think we might disagree here. So should you be able to protest at work?
I mean, I think that you have an intrinsic right to protest wherever you please. And the work situation, I don't know if you're thinking of any specific examples, but the one that makes me go to the extreme of you can protest wherever you damn like is strike action. I think you should be able to strike and the union should be respected and that they should be listened to and that proper mediation should be done through unions rather than one-to-one contracts. And if the only way to get back to that is through individual protestation, then we should support that wholeheartedly.
Right. What about this way? I work at one of the biggest recruitment firms in the world. I walk in there and I say, I'm not going to do any work until you guys do more to make sure that the women in the office are paid as much as the men and that we do more to employ European Union workers who aren't getting as much as they potentially could be if their qualifications transferred as quickly as possible. Should I be allowed to do that and not be fired by my bosses?
Yeah, I mean, you should have a contract that means that you're not fired on the spot. I mean, whether you still lose your job or not, that's a different matter altogether. Yes. But it should be institutionally impossible for people to dismiss on site.
Well, not for protesting, but yeah. I think that's true, right? And I think, legitimately speaking, if these NFL players are breaking the rules, then, you know, if Colin Kaepernick isn't hired, then that's fine. In fact, I don't necessarily have a problem with him not being hired because he protested, right? What I do have a problem with is what it does say about the league. And it is a league that, as we know, have had people who have been accused and convicted of rape, people who have been accused and convicted and punished for assault and battery, people who have been accused and convicted of manslaughter. We've had people who have been accused and convicted of domestic violence on repeat, not just one incident, but several incidences. We've had people who have brought the game to disrepute with steroids. We've got people who have done like illicit drugs. These people still have jobs. And the person...
Dog fighting.
How could I forget dog fighting? How could I forget soliciting prostitutes as well? And they still have jobs. Or they still were not fired. But then this person who protested peacefully, won the Player of the Year by his award by his team, was voted most courageous by his peers. He was voted Player of the Month last month in the NFL. And he doesn't even play in the league. The players voted him Player of the Month, and he does not even play in the league. All of this happened, and he essentially cannot get hired. Like, there's no job for him. So I'm completely fine if them saying, look, well, you know, we have the right to fire you for doing that. Cool, sure. But what does it say about you? Like, if all of these things are going to happen, and that, I'll give you an example. The Baltimore Ravens have a quarterback who's not very good right now. Joe Flacco is not very good right now. The owner of the Baltimore Ravens gets told by his coach and his like talent scout, we think we should hire this guy. We should hire Kaepernick. Kaepernick would be good for us. Our quarterback is injured, has a bad back. The owner said, we're going to put it up to the fans. And he said, God help us. A couple years ago, one of his players hit his wife so hard, she was knocked out. There was no, hey, let's put this up to the fans. There was no talk of God helping them. He had 2 weeks, hired him back, sent him a text message saying, hey, look, we're going to get you back here as soon as this all blows over. That is what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the message that came out after Trump went after the NFL players was like, he's gone too far. Which it frustrated me because I was like, you know, you bastards who didn't care when the Access Hollywood tape came out, or you bastards that sat there and, you know, could rationally explain why Trump was coming up because of reason. And you might not have agreed with it, but you were like, you know what, it's not going to affect me. I mean, I have a few people in mind who I won't say. Those people who then text me saying that Donald Trump has gone too far because he's come after the NFL players. You've really got to wonder. And I think my test for those people was to ask, yeah, it's weird though, right? Because Colin Kaepernick's still not employed. This is my litmus test. If people text back and say, oh, well, yeah, it's because he's not a very good player, that tells me something. And if people text back and be like, yeah, I know, it's terrible, isn't it? Then that tells me something too. Because let's all not fucking pretend that this has anything to do with the abilities of Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback.
Oh, man. Rex Ryan came out. He used to be a coach of the Jets, but also the Bills. Yeah, the Buffalo Bills. He used to be the coach of the Buffalo Bills. He publicly endorsed Trump, opened him on stage into a rally, kept quiet, and then when Trump said, and he called them SOBs, then Rex Ryan was like, I'm really ashamed. This is it for me. I can't believe I didn't sign up for this. That was his coming to Jesus moment. That was the moment where he was like, whoa, shit, this is... I don't want to be part of this Trump train anymore. That was it for him. People are exposing themselves, and it's hilarious. And it's like, a part of me also feels like shit, because we're not necessarily going, this is what the protest is about. This is what Colin Kaepernick has done. This is how it's like being shown and affected. And this is the conversation that we're not having. But like... It's in one level, it's good to see just people coming to Jesus. I know it's late and I'm not going to give you shit about it, but it's good to see people coming to Jesus.
I don't know. I don't really care if fucking the walking advertisement for diabetes that is Rex Ryan, that's a fucking coming to Jesus moment about Donald Trump. You know, like, I just find it so frustrating. I think I saw it on the news that, I can't remember where it was reported, but that Colin Kaepernick has said that he will stand for the anthem.
Yeah, he so did. That, right at the start of the season.
And I think,
right at the start of the season.
I think, you know, this is the world we live in, right? We all have to make the checks and move forward. And I don't think that it should be solely on Colin Kaepernick's shoulders to carry that fight. And it doesn't stop me feeling by degrees kind of melancholic about this like pure form of protest that no, he has to continue unemployed and, you know, stick it to the man. Yeah. I think he should get a job. And I think he should be respected for literally stopping the world and making it think about something that it previously wasn't paying that too much attention to. And I think he deserves all of the credit for that. And it just really upsets me that Donald Trump's risen in and tried, like everything else in the world, has made it about him.
I'm gonna skip the question about how much of it, if this is just folks on liking black people. We didn't...
Do we have to?
I don't know, man.
I just wanted to. I've been saving something up just for this. I mean, it's not maybe necessarily for this question, but the thing that I said at the start, that I was just confused mm-hmm. at how Trump hadn't targeted this before. And I think what is so horrifying yet brilliant about how he goes about things is that he takes something that had its own politics, sure, it had its problems, but was existing outside of his world. The minute that he touches it, he manages, not him personally, but brand Trump, to turn, in this example, sports into a racial hierarchy. So at the time that this happened a few weeks ago, NASCAR came out and said that they would like fire anybody that protested the flag, and Donald Trump had this like pleasing Twitter exchange with them and was like, hey, you know, someone's listening to me. Whereas, you know, the LeBron James and the Steph Currys and the American football players were like, no, fuck you, even although we've discussed a few of the problems about how that protest went. And I think this is just the thing that is so corrupting here, is this we understand it before he really even says it, that there is a racial hierarchy in the States and that it is applied in professional sports, because NASCAR is a hillbilly sport, essentially, that predominantly white people take part in and predominantly white people, you know, watch or engage with. But something like the NFL, where you have predominantly black athletes getting paid multi-million dollar deals, cannot exist without Trump forcing it into a racial hierarchy. You have to be grateful for what America has done for you, because it is abhorrent to Trump. Just like it's abhorrent to Trump that there was ever a black president, it's abhorrent to Trump that there are black people making money in the States, and he has to force that into some sort of like racial hierarchy and logic. And I think that's like deeply uncomfortable, and it is racism that is at the heart of everything that he does. And you know, any team that's had somebody like Steve Bannon intimately involved, although I know he's not now, and Stephen Miller is still there, you know, racial logic and racial hierarchies, as per the Charlottesville protesters, will not be far away. And I think we have to call it as we see it, and it's happening in this instance. In order to fight the powers that be, fight the power, 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 fight the power. We've got to fight the powers that be. All right, welcome back to Distorted Shades of Grey. I figured we needed to end that last section because I couldn't follow anything Mark set up with anything actually coherent or logical, because he just basically left me in a pile of mush. So to finish this off, do you have any suggestions on how you can protest without offending someone, but at the same time, you know, gaining those people who would be offended to not be offended so they could join you in protesting, because, you know,
they really would want to help you out there. They just can't get past the fact that you're protesting. And because they can't get past that you're protesting, they get inconvenienced by it. And because they're inconvenienced, they don't want to join you. So I hope that all makes sense. But do you have any suggestions or ideas?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's just clearly obvious at this point, especially through the case of Colin Kaepernick, that it's not actually about the protest. You know, as we've just talked about, the protest is deeply respectful in inverted commas, whether you want to go into like whether he has to be respectful at all. But I think it's moving and it's intelligent and it's engaging and it's respectful. You know, that's as compassionate as somebody can protest against something. You know, it's like, hey, I care about this thing. I've put some thought into it. This is how I'm deciding to express myself because I don't want to not express myself, but I'm doing this in a way that isn't going to get in your way, but you will notice me and we can have a conversation. You know, this is like the far end of considerate protesting. And if even this is being thrown under the bus, I really feel like it gives you carte blanche to do what you want. I mean, I know that's easy for me to say. What is on the table for people to protest is very different depending on your race and your class and your ethnicity. You know, a big group of white people striking outside of the Ritzy in London looks completely different to a big group of Muslim people striking, and the reactions that those would get are completely different, and that would, people know that, and that will dictate the way that they choose to protest. But I essentially think that I don't have the specific answers, just like I couldn't have told Colin Kaepernick to kneel in the way that he did. That was a very specific integration of lots of different forces. But so I guess I don't have a specific recommendation, but just to say, I don't really think anything is off the table.
I think by the very nature of protesting, the way that it works is that you need to pick a side, and that it's, hey, you're either for this or you're against this. It's sharp. There is no middle ground, right? So when one of the very few protests that I've been to was walking through on Australia Day, which is Invasion and Survival Day for our Aboriginal brothers and sisters, was walking through Perth, going through a park which was having an Australia Day festival, and walking through it to a little segregated area where they put us in the Aborigines. And singing "Always Was, Always Will Be Aboriginal Land." So you, at first I was like, I don't know if I can say that. And I had to go, well, I'm either for this or against this, right? And you're walking through, and the entire point is to get noise, is to get notice, is to make a statement and to say, well, look, you either agree with this or you don't agree with this. So protests by design are to be offensive. Protests by design are to kind of shock somebody's system. I suppose the only way to make a protest non-offensive is to not have a protest in the first place, is to like create systems where there is no need to protest. That's my 10 o'clock, that's my 3 minutes past 10, really tired, had a long day. Suggestion is, if we can fix the reason why people are protesting, then there won't be a protest, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. This conversation about protest has just made me think about a form of protest I daren't recommend to anybody and makes me shiver to consider myself. But and there's this really famous protester. I think he's linked to Pussy Riot, and he's Russian.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it was the middle of winter. It was definitely winter in Moscow. Went into What's the main square in Moscow? Red Square? I don't know. You know where the Kremlin is and stuff. Anyway, stripped naked in winter and nailed his scrotum to one of the cobbles.
If that's not offensive, I don't know what is.
I mean, I don't even know if that should make the final cut, but it's just, what protest should and shouldn't you do? I think that's about where I'd draw the line. Let me say this, if Colin Kaepernick gets a job and then nails the scrotum to the pitch, I'm going to be like, Colin, come on.
Colin, you've gone too far.
You've gone too far.
Yeah, he's like, even I'm not about civil rights. I don't care how much we want civil rights and civil liberties and equality, but if it involves nailing our scrims, then I don't want any part. That's when bring back Jim Crow if it involves nailing my scrotum or something, right?
Martin would have done lots, but I don't think Martin would have done that. Oh, sorry, Malcolm. Martin would never have done that.
With that being said, do you have any joy? Any joy that's in your life or that you're looking forward to?
I'm back in university and I'm currently having my mind blown about gender and is it a construct? And not only is it a construct, but are there two genders or are there three genders or are there a non-limited amount of genders?
See, this is a question that we can have later on. have you seen the documentary The Mask You Live In?
Nah.
Sorry, the documentary The Mask You Live In paints gender as a spectrum and says that that people whose sex, which is different, people whose sex are male, people whose sex are female, have 90% of the gender fluidity overlapping against each other. But it's the 5% on each side or 10% on each side that is hyper-emphasized in men and hyper-emphasized in women.
Mm.
And so then the idea is that there possibly is just fluidity.
Yeah.
But rather than like talk about the fluidity, talk about emotions, talk about strength, talk about being vulnerable. Men are just strong, masculine beings. Women are soft and supple and gentle and need to be looked after and cared for. And so then if you grow up in this mindset or in these areas where one or the other is emphasized, then that's what we then deem as a man and that's what we then deem as a woman. So it'd be interesting to get your thoughts once you read a bit more of that, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading a theorist called Judith Butler, and that's essentially her, what you just said, that there is no different sexes that don't exist outside of like how we culturally understand them. So that all we're doing is behaving in accordance to norms that are culturally discussed, and even those norms are not existent in of themselves. It's something that we kind of create within. It's like, I don't know. It's pretty hardcore stuff. But basically,
That's your joy. Just to be clear, that is your joy right now.
That's my joy. I read this shit before I go to bed, and then have nightmares about like people like on mass scale figuring this out, and then it being a kind of purge like event where people are like rioting in the streets, and it's like a zombie apocalypse. Except it's not zombies. It's just everyone has figured out that like things like gender are all just a construct, and that we don't actually have to be male or female, and then everything goes to shit because
I can wear a skirt tomorrow and it's fine.
We need categories. We need them. It's fun to think about, but we need them so bad.
Yeah. It's like we don't want to think about this kind of shit.
You don't want to be outside it. Yeah. Yeah. So that, what about you?
Joy for me. I have a new role. Working full time is pretty joyful, despite the incredible hours. Getting to actually speak to people and have be on the other side of the employment table where I'm like, tell me why I should hire you rather than give me the reasons why I should be hired. It's pretty sweet. Also, the looks that people give me when I'm at the train station and I'm called up with my hoodie all the way up, zipped all the way to the top, and my hood over my head because it's freezing cold sometimes in Manchester mornings, and how those look differ from once we get into the train and I zip down my hoodie and I have a suit and tie on. Those looks, they bring me joy. Oh, and I'm also reading, I'm also almost done Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Beautiful Struggle. It's really cool. It's, yeah, like the hip hop references and pop culture references and that is really, really fun to like read and understand him talking about how he was growing up and like understanding, and gaining the knowledge to pass through the streets of Baltimore. So if you get a chance to do it, read it. When I was reading it on the train on the way back from Manchester, a lady and her partner, husband, friend, I'm not too sure, sitting next to me pointed to the book and said, "We know the author." And I said, "What do you mean? Like, we, you know the author?" "No, he's a friend of ours." I was like, "You know Ta-Nehisi Coates?" They're like, "Yeah, we know him." And they sent him a tweet and said, "Hey, we saw this book Manchester." Yeah, I don't know if he replied, but they were like, "Yeah, we know him. We speak friends with him all the time." So,
oh, man.
Joy.
Joy. Get on Twitter. That's awesome. Yeah, I actually, Ta-Nehisi Coates is such a treasure. My I got a you know, on Twitter you can get messages. The only person that sends me messages on Twitter is my mum. I don't know why she doesn't just tweet things at me. But she messaged me on Twitter, God bless her, and she said, "Oh, I don't know if you saw this, but I thought I just read it and I thought you might be interested." And she tweeted me the Ta-Nehisi Coates most recent piece at The Atlantic.
Yes, mum. Like,
yes, mum, get in. He actually sat down and like read. Like that's like, I mean, my mum's like a really intelligent person, but like I've sent her stuff before and I'm like, "This is really amazing, you should read it," but then it's like 10,000 words long. Like I was like,
Mrs. You know, someone needs to step her game up. So, mum, if you're listening to this, step your game up and start sending me some articles by a chair bay or something like that. But he's dead. Anyway, that is us for the episode. We've obviously been slack, like shit's happened in life. So we're going to try keep this to every 2 weeks. But if not, be grateful you're getting some stuff for free. It's pretty dope.
Yeah.
And I think our outline is keep doing it for the culture.
Peace.
Faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought. Has brought us. Let us march on to victory.